All right, so we're back then to section 3, number 2. This is a time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Brett Cordes, DVM, in case number 2121. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given in ARS 3322-34. Dr. Cordes, please come forward and introduce yourself and your attorney if represented by counsel.
Thank you. I'm Brett Cordes.
Ben David Stoll here and his legal counsel for Dr. Cordes.
Thank you. Dr. Cordes, you've received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take in this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, and placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We have no additional materials beyond the statement from Dr. Lertzman and the article that we submitted last week.
Okay. The purpose of this this proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it's important that everyone speak loudly and clearly, and only one person speaks at a time. We'll begin by asking the lead board member assigned this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you'll be given the opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. At present, the complainant will also be given the opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Dr. James, would you please give us a brief summary of the case?
This is case 2121. On June 15th, 2020, Oki, a 9-year-old female Australian Kelpie, was presented to the respondent due to an acute right hind leg injury. Respondent examined the dog and performed radiographs. Complainant was advised that the dog had arthritic changes in her knees bilaterally and severe sacrolumbar stenosis. Laser treatment was recommended and the complainant agreed. The dog continued to limp and be in pain, therefore complainant had a friend evaluate the dog. Cranial cruciate ligament injury was suspected. On July 16th, 2020, the dog was presented to Dr. Scheibel for a second opinion. The dog was diagnosed with a right cranial cruciate ligament rupture and a TPLO surgery was performed.
Dr. Cordes, this time I'd like to swear you in. You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so have you got it.
I do.
Dr. Cordes, we'd now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Yes.
Thank
you. As I previously indicated, I've been practicing for 25 years and I've never had my license disciplined in any way. It was frankly unprepared and without legal counsel during the investigative committee meeting in February. At the time of that meeting, I was still recovering from esophageal cancer surgery and treatment. I hope you all have had an opportunity to review the opinion letter I submitted from a consulting expert witness in this matter, Dr. Lertzman. Dr. Lertzman is a board certified surgeon, and he would have been one of the surgeons to whom I would consider referring the owner to in this case had I been at the point where I felt it was medically appropriate to make the surgical referral. Surgical referrals are something that I routinely do as a part of my practice all the time. However, during the short period, 17-day period of time that Oki was under my care, I was dealing with other health concerns in Oki involving the spine and questions on valley fever. As Oki's late, I was dealing with multiple orthopedic problems involving the spine as well as Oki's leg, and I believe then and believe now that initial conservative management was completely appropriate. Dr. Lertzman, after having reviewed the medical records, unequivocally agrees with the approach I took in the case. In sum, Dr. Lertzman, a board-certified surgeon, has opined that initial conservative management was prudent, and I did not misdiagnose or mismanage the case in any way. Admittedly, Oki's case was somewhat complicated. She's an older dog with a recent history of lameness and intervertebral disc problems and suspected chronic valley fever, which can also cause lameness. I immediately did what no one had done prior and took x-rays of the back and knees and found evidence of chronic arthritis in those areas. We immediately began treatment of both back and knees. We did not ignore those knees, we prioritized the back first. Ultimately, the owner never followed up with me after the two-week treatment plan and deprived me of the opportunity to make additional recommendations that would have included a surgical referral consult had the dog not improved. In closing, I stand behind the recommendations I gave to the owner and the veterinary care I provided in this case. I think if I'm guilty of anything, it's not focusing exclusively on the dog's leg and rushing her into surgery, but instead we're looking at the entire patient. I took a conservative whole body non-surgical approach to address her multiple problems. The fact that this dog continues to take chronic pain medications even after the TPL surgery supports our approach. As Dr. Lertzman says, this was appropriate, reasonable, and prudent case management and did not fall below the standard of care. And I am now available to take questions that you may have.
I'd now like to ask board members if they have any questions for Dr. Cordes.
I have a couple questions. I'll go ahead and get started. So I think I understand what you're saying as far as how you approach the case. My questions really are more in line with how the case was followed through to completion. So it looks like this pet came in at least 4-5 times for laser therapy. And at those exams, or those times, no exam was completed. Is that correct?
Not by me, no. Those would the first appointment that I met the owner, we scheduled the rehab package, which is 6 laser treatments, and I generally would not be involved with those laser treatments. They would just be a, what we considered a technician-only exam.
So during those, I mean, it looks like from what was submitted to us that there were multiple times where the owner told the technician that things were worsening, the dog wasn't using the leg at all, whereas your exam found the dog was not even lame, and lots of kind of conflicting information. So would your technicians typically relay that information to you?
Yes, they did. Normally I would not look at the patient during that 6 treatment course necessarily, but the technician did let me know the one time, and we did reevaluate the dog midway through that treatment as indicated, and we made some adjustments at that time.
And then, obviously, I mean, craniobruciate ligament ruptures are not always straightforward, and they don't always want to let us know that they're there. But did you consider additional diagnostics and sedation or anything to evaluate that further?
Not until we finished our rehab plan. And my rule of thumb, personally, having worked and referred every we work in an area where we diagnose and refer all of our orthopedics. We don't handle orthopedics in our practice. That's not exactly true. Dr. Sidaway will be one of our referral doctors, but Dr. Lertzman Southwest are in our neighborhood. We use them a lot. My rule of thumb is I'm not going to sedate the dog to take x-rays because I know Dr. Lertzman pretty well, and he's very particular about how he wants his angles for knees to diagnose, so I don't like to do that. I would refer those sedation x-rays to allow the specialist to get the precision angles that they want for such a knee procedure, if that makes sense. That's always how I've done it. So.
And would you say, I mean, obviously you had multiple things going on in this dog and evidence of arthritis and, you know, lumbosacral disease. There were a lot of things going on, but would you say you, in your mind, you had ruled out that the craniobruciate was an issue, or was that something you were still considering?
We It was still on the table. We never confirmed it nor denied it, if that's fair. We were really focusing on the entire dog at first, assuming we'd have the opportunity to follow up, and which I did not after the treatment course was over. Normally, we like to follow up after our first recommendation. And then the owner decided to self-refer, which I have no problem with. I just was not involved with that part.
Obviously, and I don't do laser, so bear with me, but I assume that the reason you do 6 treatments is because it takes time to see if there's going to be any effect with the laser. Is that accurate?
You know, laser is one of those things like supplements, but yes, I think you need at least 6 has been you need multiple, I think, to know if you're going to receive benefit. In addition, the dog was, I think, I wouldn't rely upon laser. I want to make it very clear. I would never rely upon laser for a dog who's painful. We had this dog on multiple oral medications, which those alone, I think, meet a good standard of care as well in terms of treating pain. That's fair.
So typically in a 6-week regimen, would you expect a dog to actually decline during that period, if that's what it was for? You give him pain medication, you're doing the laser, you think this is chronic arthritis, and yet the dog's declining.
I'm sorry, 6 treatments over 2 weeks is, I think, not 6, you said 6 weeks.
Okay, 6 treatments.
6 treatments, yeah, over 2 weeks. We would not expect the dog to decline. It's my opinion, when I see the dog in the practice too, the dog looks very athletic and is still very healthy, if that makes sense. We heard the owners first when I met her the second time. I listened to her and we decided to continue the treatment anyway because the dog visibly looked good.
Thoughts on why that's the case? Like, you examined this dog at least twice, once at the beginning and then once kind of in that middle section. Neither time did you really see a true lameness, and yet they go to a friend, referral, whatever, and there's an obvious lameness, obviously, in their opinion, where it's a knee issue. Like, how come you were seeing very different clinical presentation? Can you even guess as to why that might have been the case?
Yeah, this is an Australian Kelpie, which is a high drive working dog, which we're familiar with. So, and the dog itself, outside of its own environment, which is up on a ranch in Page, Arizona, outside of that environment, this dog is as a high drive dog on edge. And I think the reason it's that the magic door syndrome, you know, every time a dog comes into your practice, you'll see those problems don't exist. You definitely want to acknowledge them. You don't want to ignore them. I think when the dog's at home, it's in its natural environment. It's limping, it's lame. Those are the discussions I had with the owner too, but they're not documented in the record. So that was my belief.
Did the client at any point during this ask about an MRI or referral?
She did.
And did you explain why or why not you would recommend that?
I didn't think at the time that an MRI would be appropriate because it's a diagnostic, not a treatment. So focus on treatment. It wouldn't change outcomes in the short term. So focusing on treatment first, and then should treatments not work, then I would send an orthopedic for evaluation, not necessarily jump to. But MRI is kind of jumping a bit ahead, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think owners do that a lot. They jump to what humans would say for themselves, but miss all the steps in between.
Yes.
And then I just have one question. I know that at some point there was an addendum added to the medical record. Can you explain why that was added as an addendum and not at the time that it happened?
It was really for the board case. I was interpreting the letter I received and was reacting to it. Wanted to capture what I could remember of the case, the discussions that the owner and I had. A lot of things that you necessarily wouldn't archive in a medical record, so some of it I just wrote down based off memory. My records, I do admit, were a little lean at that time. So I captured those information, those bits and pieces, and put them where I thought I was supposed to, which is right in just one part of the medical record. And the intent was to clearly indicate that for you, so you knew it was not, wasn't trying to be fraudulent or cover any tracks, I guess. It was trying to capture what I could remember from something that was a bit aged.
I don't have any additional questions.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question of Dr. Cordes. Is the laser treatment, is that often referred to as the cold laser treatment?
Correct.
Okay. And is that used at any time to treat a cruciate ligament rupture?
Surgery is the treatment of choice in most cases, except for maybe an older dog like this with multiple. But yeah, surgery is generally the treatment of choice.
Thank you.
Any other board members have questions? All right, so we have the plaintiff is not participating. So I guess based on those questions, Dr. Cordes, do you or your legal counsel have any additional remarks or questions that you'd like to ask?
I think his legal counsel has some closing comments. I only recently got involved in this case, and when I got it, I was trying to figure out what was behind the complaint. And then recently, I read the statement of Dr. Cynthia DeFranco, and I believe that this board complaint would not have been filed without her involvement in this case. Dr. DeFranco is not only a friend of the complainants, but she's also a veterinarian whose license in Arizona has been suspended since 2005. It was suspended for unlawfully taking controlled substances, narcotic drugs from the practice. Although she could have, she has never completed the terms of her September 16, 2005 consent agreement that she entered into to reactivate her license. She is not a credible witness. She should not be examining pets, making diagnoses and judging the conduct of other veterinarians like Dr. Cordes, who has never had his license disciplined in any way. During your review of the committee recommendations last month, I believe we addressed your concerns with regard to the proposed violation related to the medical records. As Dr. Cordes explained to you today, the records were not altered. What he did do was, after he received the board complaint, and again, he was represented by counsel at the time, he made he added information for the 2 days that he examined the dog and provided some additional information. However, he specifically noted that those small additions were addendums and they were date stamped. They were not alterations of the prior record. Nothing was altered from the original record, and there should be no violation for medical records alterations. With regard to the laser treatments, those were technician appointments similar to vaccine appointments. They were not scheduled veterinarian appointments, and therefore Dr. Cordes didn't perform an exam because the owner was not charged for an exam fee and it was not that type of appointment. He did testify here today that his technicians did what they were supposed to do, and that is to report any changes during those appointments. And I believe during one of those appointments, after the technician brought to the attention of the doctor that the owner didn't feel these treatments were being successful, he did see the dog at that time and made an entry in the medical record for that exam. Finally, with regard to the owner's claim that Dr. Cordes was grossly negligent, please keep in mind that this dog had multiple problems going on, most significant of which was this intervertebral disc issues, chronic valley fever, chronic arthritis, and reports of lameness. Lameness that were never present during the time that Dr. Cordes actually saw the dog. He chose to treat the entire patient, not just the suspected knee issue, and that knee was not ignored. He took x-rays of the knee that he reviewed, and then he sent those x-rays out for a consult with pet rays, and neither interpretation supported a surgical referral for a repair of a TPLO. Dr. Cordes did take a conservative approach to treating the entire patient for pain. Specifically, he initially recommended a course of laser therapy and intended to then reevaluate that course of treatment after the therapy was completed. He never got that opportunity because the owner went elsewhere. He didn't have the chance to make further adjustments and recommendations that might have included an ultrasound and surgical referral. Ultimately, today you'll have to judge Dr. Cordes's management of this case based upon the information he had at the time during this 7-day period of time he managed the case. Fortunately, to help you with that analysis, you have the benefit of a standard of care opinion letter from an independent witness in this case, Dr. Lertzman. He's a board-certified surgeon. He reviewed all the medical records in this case from Dr. Cordes, including the x-rays and the treatment history for Oki. And he concluded that he found no fault or criticisms whatsoever with regard to Dr. Cordes's management. In sum, and to use Dr. Lertzman's own words about the conservative management, he said it was prudent. We trust that you will agree that the care that Dr. provided was prudent, did not fall below the standard of care, and that you will issue a dismissal with no violation. Thank you.
Are there any more questions from board members? Seeing none, this concludes a portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Dr. James, you are the lead.
So, this case was a difficult one to interpret because what you were seeing at the clinic was very different than what this animal was experiencing at home and what this animal ultimately experienced with other veterinarians. So I totally get the concept of a dog will behave differently at home, but this dog behaved differently at other veterinarians as well. So it's kind of a weird situation. I don't doubt that the dog wasn't acting fine when it came into the clinic. I don't see any reason why a doctor would say it was acting fine when it wasn't. That just doesn't make sense. So, I mean, I'm not doubting that. It's just that's making the case a little bit difficult to interpret. You know, looking at the investigative committee findings, I think the lack of exams with the laser treatment completely makes sense. I think they were scheduled as laser appointments. That's, to me, that is not an issue. So I don't have concern with that. As far as the adding the addendum and the way it was stated, and at least from the investigative committee's thoughts, was that it was an alteration. I mean, I think the explanation that we heard today and actually heard last month too, I just couldn't remember exactly what it was, makes sense, and that it wasn't intended to be a falsification of documents or anything like that. I do think, as Dr. Cordes stated, the medical records are lean, and that might be one thing that, you know, we learn in this case going forward is that a lot of that information will really help you in cases like this. So to have it in at the time is important. I think the one that we really are going to be discussing is the case of gross negligence. I do not feel that gross negligence is appropriate in this case. I do think that ultimately we know that this dog was suffering from a cranial cruciate ligament issue, and that treatment and surgery has helped this dog, which is a good thing. You could say that that was a misdiagnosis, but I think it's hard to say when you're looking at it in hindsight, yeah, okay, well, you know, maybe you should have gone that approach first, but when you're first presented with the case, which issue are you gonna treat first becomes a lot more difficult, and I don't think that there's just reason to say that picking one over the other was wrong. I think that now that we know what happened in history, you would say it was wrong, but not at the time that it happened. In reviewing this, I mean, the biggest thing that I was concerned with is that this dog just continued to not get better. In fact, I would say it actually got worse. And we didn't act on it during this 2 weeks and a couple days or time period. Mainly, and I wouldn't say didn't act on it. We did change medications, we did reevaluate the dog, but ultimately this dog was continuing to get worse. And that's where my issue really lied with it. It wasn't with the initial care or the diagnosis at that time. So I would not say gross negligence. If anything, I would say a letter of concern for making sure that this information is documented in the medical record and that we're communicating with the owner that when this pet isn't getting better, that we need to take additional steps.
Yeah, I'll go back to your incident about the animal masking or the description where masking their vulnerabilities from one person but not from another. Totally anecdotal, take it for what it's worth, meaning worth nothing. My daughter happens to have an Australian Shepherd right now who, for whatever reason, is afraid of me. I have no idea. I mean, 99.9% of the dogs in this world will want to walk up to me and sniff to see what kind of manure is on my boot and what other dog's been rubbing up against me and smelling. This dog can just barely stand to be in the same damn room with me. And there's no reason for it. And if I come in wearing a hat and glasses, oh my God, don't even try to get close to her. But when she calms down a little bit, and eventually if I offer her a little treat, then maybe she comes see me and let me pet her for a little bit. But it's just crazy and totally different with my wife and daughter. Totally different dog. You wouldn't, I mean, unless you had a picture and could match up the markings exactly, you wouldn't know that dog standing beside me and that dog standing with my wife or my daughter, either one of them, the way they interact. It's a different dog. Now, anecdotal, like I said, totally anecdotal, might have no reference point at all. For me, it just kind of clicked with this a little bit. I lean toward the letter instead of the, like I said, if you put it in there, it's part of the record, it proves your case. If it's not there, then you're open to interpretation. Or open to us trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I think it's there. I think stifle cases, it's been a while since I've worked on dog, but my experience with them have always been that some of it being personal is that the acute stifle, I mean, I would think that would be your top rule out to an acutely lame dog. Lameness, but also knowing that processes can be not picked up on either because you're not popping the drawer motion because of the animal's temperament or even, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe the tear was partial initially and as it progressed, drawer motion might have come in later. Obviously, there was drawer motion palpated on the 11th. It wasn't palpated or going on the 15th. So whether that was a progression because you didn't appreciate it because of the animal's temperament or whether it wasn't complete or a combination of the both, I would agree. I would think that maybe conservative left inflammation diminish a little bit to get the surgery. I mean, obviously, it was a surgical problem that was in genesis at some point, but it may not have been presented that clear cut on day one, as it did on day 16 or whatever later. So I don't this is probably dogs out there that had cruciate ligaments that never had any surgery.
Yeah, it's like I waited probably a month before I even took my dog in because some days she was limping and the next day she was fine, and thinking, well,
I guess it can be tricky.
Be better, so it's like, yeah.
In my experience, that can be kind of tricky, especially initially.
Well, like I said, it could have been partial to full, right? I mean, it makes it different in the range of motion that you might feel that in that joint. It's not the same ligament, but like, I know my ACL was partially torn, and it was a whole lot different range of motion and my movement between the partial tear and the full-blown rupture, right? I mean, big difference.
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of brief questions that are just for clarification. Now, I'm understanding in the discussion that for cold laser treatments, a doctor's examination for each appointment is not necessary. However, for vaccination, is not a doctor's exam required before vaccination? Victoria.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we've always, in my time and going back probably 20 years, the agency has believed that R311, 502L4, I believe, which talks about what needs to be in a medical record, one of those things is an exam. Infers that an exam must occur every time a veterinary service is provided.
Thank you.
I would add to that, and I think we've looked at that in situations before, and I can tell you in practices, like, let's take bandage changes. They come in for a bandage change every couple days until they're healed. And I would say it's fairly routine that a doctor's not looking at those and doing another exam unless there's something that the technician goes, hey, this doesn't look right. So while, yes, I think with like vaccinations, we adhere to the exam, but I think there are situations where exams aren't done. I think it's a little bit of a gray area, and I don't know that there's a right or wrong. I mean, it just happened. I mean, animals come in for blood draws, you know, on thyroid cases every 6 months or something, and they don't get examined every time. So I just feel like we have to use a little bit of kind of what's in the norm and what we see in the practice.
I was going to say, I bring my dogs in monthly for anal gland squeezing, and I was always led to believe that it was just a tech appointment.
And that depends a little bit on practice. Like some practices won't do them anymore without an exam, but I don't know that that's not the norm, I would say. Yeah, I think yours is more the norm.
Okay.
So I think our rules give us some flexibility, and you know, we may have some hurdles to overcome in the future, but with different things people would like to do or would not like to do. But I think I would differentiate, like the vaccination. It says right on the label of every vaccine that it's to be administered to a healthy animal. Therefore, you have to have a diagnosis before you give the vaccine. Legally, that's what's on the label. It's given to a healthy animal. So a veterinarian has to make that diagnosis. This is healthy, because only a veterinarian can make a diagnosis, or is legally allowed to make a diagnosis. But if you make that diagnosis and then you prescribe a treatment, what's the difference between, okay, I prescribe 6 laser treatments, or I prescribe you take 6 pills of tramadol? You don't do an exam right before they take each pill of tramadol. So why would you do an exam right before each laser treatment?
Right. Well, to that point, you could probably prescribe the laser to take home with the patient, to go to that and let them.
Yeah.
Relatively low, but to continue the therapy. I don't know if that would be an option, because probably you only have one piece of equipment, so it wouldn't be practical, but I mean, conceivably, a layperson could probably administer that treatment.
Yeah, so I mean, I see there's those differences, and sometimes when we think about exactly what the statute says, exactly what the rule says, you know, the rule's not perfect. We just can't write everything a perfect prescription for everything that's going to happen in our lives. It's going to happen. We got to figure out, is it important enough to make a difference or not? I don't think here it is.
Mr. Chairman, I would then pose another question for clarification. Is use of cold laser equipment on an animal considered the practice of veterinary medicine?
And you want to drag this meeting out all day, don't you?
I would avoid answering that direct question.
Okay.
You don't have any facts, you know, exact facts to talk about that. You'd have to look at the statute that defines the practice of veterinary medicine and parse that out.
Okay.
And I don't know that even pertains to anything here, but the decision we have to make in this case. So it's on the floor, and we have a second, right? Do we have a second to
I made the motion that you said you would agree, but I don't know that you seconded it. So we probably need
a second.
Okay. So we do have a motion on the floor, second, letter of concern.
Okay.
for the specifics, remind us.
Ensuring that information pertinent to the exam is included in the examination's findings rather than having to make an addendum.
Yeah.
And for ensuring that if a pet is not improving during the course of any kind of therapy, whether it's pain medication, laser, whatever, that we're following up to take appropriate action.
All right, so that's the motion on the floor. We discussed it. Any further discussion? Then let's do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Crager?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Heinrich?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Loki?
Aye.
Ms. Sondland?
Aye.
The board has voted to dismiss this case and issue a letter of concern. This concludes this matter, and Dr. Cordesi will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for participating today. This concludes the